Our first case for argument is Vendetti v. Compass Environmental Company. Mr. Rice.
Good morning, Joel Rice, on behalf of Compass Environmental and William Broderick. Your Honors, the central issue in this case is whether the Chicago travel assignment of Mr. Vendetti amounted to a relocation within the meaning of the employment agreement. We contend that the district court erred and should be reversed in its determination that that amounted to a relocation. The reason cited by the district court, we believe, was clearly erroneous. The language of the agreement does not support an interpretation that any and all travel, no matter the duration of the travel, amounts to a relocation within the meaning of the agreement.
Well, let's assume that the contract gave Compass the right to require Mr. Vendetti to travel, but not to relocate him. You say that having him spend two business weeks per month was not a de facto relocation. At what point do you think requiring him to spend his work week in Chicago would have amounted to de facto relocation?
Well, Your Honor, obviously there's line drawing here. We believe that the two business weeks a month is short of where the line should be drawn. I will acknowledge there could be an amount of travel that was sufficiently long-standing and occupied enough of the month. If he was required to travel to Chicago for 30 days a month but was told you don't need to sell your house and we'll keep your office in Stone Mountain, then that could be tantamount to a relocation. But here we're talking about, at most, Monday through Friday, 2 weeks a month, and on the deal.
Does the company pay for his travel and living expenses in Chicago?
The company paid for him to travel to and from Chicago, and they would pay
My understanding
is they paid for his hotel expenses. That's correct. This was ordinary business travel that executives engage in all the time, many of whom have these agreements.
Forgive me, but you argued that the two-week arrangement was not going to be long-term.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But when Compass told him that he was to spend two weeks a month in Chicago indefinitely, and you know, I have quotes around indefinitely, or, and again, quote marks around, or the foreseeable future, I mean, doesn't that suggest an open-ended and what most would think of as a potentially long-term obligation?
Well, I have two answers to that, Your Honor. Number one, our position is that even if it was a long-term obligation, two business weeks a month, Monday through Friday.
Well, how long was it going to be?
Our position is that the 2 weeks a month would have ended.
How long was this going to last?
He didn't know. That's why he used the word indefinite.
He can't put any bounds on it?
He couldn't, because there was an annual audit.
10 years, 20 years, or what?
No, the term of his contract ran out.
I don't understand. Why can't there be an estimate of how long this training and monthly closing business was going to last?
I think the training wasn't the problem, Your Honor. The problem was the annual audit. In past years, it had varied quite a bit in terms of
how long does an annual audit take? It doesn't take a whole year, I take it.
It does not, Your Honor. I think it could last anywhere from 2 months to 6 months, depending upon what issues cropped up. So Mr. Dubnicka, who had had some problems in the past with Mr. Vendetti.
By that, are you saying that he could have spent 2 weeks a month for 6 months working on an annual audit?
What Mr. Dubnicka said was that every month we need you to assist with the monthly close. That task, there's no dispute that that task lasts 2 to 3 days. So basically 1 week a month he would be committed for the monthly close. He added the extra week because during that time period.
It's not an extra week, right? It's an extra 7 to 8 days.
Depending upon how you calculate the monthly.
2 or 3 days from.
I would agree, Your Honor. That's an extra 7 days. And what he said was during this period, you are the controller who has vital knowledge of the work in process reports and other accounting issues. That year, the auditors were only going to be in Chicago. They had integrated their computer systems, and the auditors would be spending all of their time in Chicago, Illinois. Mr. Dubnicka made the business decision that it made more sense to have Mr. Vendetti available to assist the auditors. There might be downtime when the auditors didn't need his immediate assistance. That's the reason he wrote that email saying there are other tasks you could perform. He meant it in that context, which was during this period when the audit is taking place. He had had difficulties with Mr. Vendetti in taking him too literally, so in order to be fair to him, he just said, I don't know when it's going to end. For right now, that's the task. But he never told him, this is permanent. He could have easily said that, and he didn't.
What do you mean when you say he had had problems with him taking him too literally?
There's testimony in the record that from Compass witnesses that, unlike the other executives of the company, if Mr. Vendetti was told to show up on Monday, he would fly and get in at Monday at 11:58 p.m. It would be technically accurate, but it would not be within the spirit of the directive. So the company, Mr. Dubnicka, was concerned that he not give Mr. Vendetti a directive or a business instruction that he could misconstrue. So instead, he left it open-ended because he didn't know for sure when this would end. But at most, we're talking Monday through Friday suitcase travel paid for by the company returning to Stone Mountain every weekend. And again, we do not believe that there was any communication that he could have construed to mean permanent, only that you are needed for these three tasks. We don't know for sure when they're going to end. And I might add, the company invited Mr. Vendetti to come to Chicago the week of April 24th to talk about it, and he refused to do so. That was an opportunity for him to get clarity that he didn't obtain. And again, Your Honors, our other position here is that even if you conclude that the 2 weeks a month assignment was a de facto relocation, Mr. Vendetti still had an obligation to show up in Chicago the week of April 24th. His failure to do that was insubordination and was a material breach on his own part.
Are these relocation provisions or no relocation provisions, are they common in employment contracts?
They are very common in employment. I practice in this area, Your Honor, and I would say that this type of language, principal location, more than 45...
Cases that have construed this, and following up on Judge Rovner's question, cases which say, which explain what will count as a de facto relocation?
Well, we cited at least one. We cited a few cases in our brief, no appellate court cases, but there's a case called Peach versus Altamar, which is a federal court case from Michigan. Your Honor, the language is very, very similar to the language in this case. It says participants, principal business location. You could substitute the word executive for participant, and it's essentially the same language. And that was a case involving business travel every week, all week, for six straight weeks, and the court said that was not a de facto relocation. It was business travel. So there are cases that have looked at this, and conversely, Mr. Vendetti has not cited a single case that has held that business travel of a particular amount constitutes relocation. And I would say, Your Honor, there are probably hundreds of these agreements, if not thousands, floating around out there.
But 6 weeks is not indefinitely, and 6 weeks is not for the foreseeable future. The problem is for the foreseeable future could be years.
Your Honor, we think in the context in which that email was written, it should not reasonably have been construed that way. Mr. Vendetti knew that there were very specific tasks he was being asked to perform, and there was a backdrop for this. He knew that he was needed for the audit. Mr. Dubnicka's emails, his use of those words can't be divorced from the context in which those words were used.
What would have happened to have terminated his need to spend 2 weeks in Chicago every month?
what would have happened, the cross-training, which was the least of the three.
What does cross-training mean?
There were employees underneath Mr. Vendetti in Stone Mountain, Georgia, who were being let go. There were Chicago accounting office personnel who needed to know those people's functions. Mr. Vendetti was the supervisor of the people who had been let go.
Why is it called cross-training?
I think the reason...
He's training. He's supposed to train them. Okay.
I think the cross-training was partly because he was training these new people and partly because he was training people in the Chicago office on the elements of his job because he was isolated.
So you say the training would have just taken 2 or 3 days, and anyway, that would evaporate eventually. They'd be trained.
Correct.
Now, this annual audit, you can't spend 6 months on an annual audit.
Your Honor, you wouldn't be spending 6 months continuously, but they wanted to have him available during that period. And I'm not saying it would take 6 months. I think the prior year they had completed the audit in June. This directive was in the spring, so we're talking a few months out.
5 months on an annual audit? Seems odd.
Your Honor, all I can say is that had been their past experience, that from start to finish, it might take several weeks or even several months. But the point is that when
Does that mean that every year he would spend 2 weeks in every month for 5 or 6 months on an annual audit?
Your Honor, I don't think we can know beyond the assignments that were given him then. It might be that if he had come to them and talked to them in Chicago or as time went on, they might have been able to work out a different arrangement. All we know is...
He was tired. Did they know he was going to have to spend all his time in Chicago?
When he was hired, every single one of those Williams executives knew that they would be traveling to Chicago on occasion, and Mr. Vendetti had traveled to Chicago in the past. When they integrated the accounting systems for the two companies, Mr. Vendetti was charged with overseeing that. He traveled several times to Chicago in the past. He never complained that
Why
travel amounted to a real...
people in Chicago to do this stuff rather than flying them back and forth and paying for their hotels?
Well, the integration of two different companies. The Williams company was based in Georgia, and they had personnel that had a lot of knowledge about that aspect of the operations, and they were vital people to the company.
And that he was new.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
He was new at some point, right?
Vendetti was new as of 2004 when they acquired Williams. He came with the Williams acquisition.
Didn't know how much time he would have to spend in Chicago?
I think they knew that all of the executives would have to travel on occasion, and that is why our position is that principal location language never meant that they could travel.
But this is more than occasion. That's what's troublesome. Is this going to be indefinite every year till his contract runs out? He will spend maybe half the year and...
Your Honor, our position, Mr. Dubnicka's emails were written only in the context of that year getting those three tasks done. He wasn't looking beyond that horizon, and that's all those emails.
One task is the training, the second task the annual audit, and the third is what? These monthly closeouts?
Is the monthly close.
But that's month after month, right?
That is correct, Your Honor, and we don't dispute that he would be needed for the monthly close every month, but that would only take 2 to 3 days. And our position is less than a week travel is not...
So 2 or 3 days for the monthly audit and 2 or 3 days for the training, and then a week for the annual audit? Is that the idea?
I think that's the idea, Your Honor, is that the second week he'd be available to the auditors.
Well, that would take only 5 or 6 months.
That's correct, Your Honor. Outer limits, it might take 5 or 6 months. Outer limits.
I know you're into your rebuttal.
I am, Your Honor. I noticed that.
Forgive me, but yes. I just want to make certain that I understand something. If he had to be there 5 days the one week and 5 days the second week, the company paid for him to fly back that weekend you know, the weekend in between?
That's correct. He never had to stay over the weekend. They would fly him back. Okay. It was Monday morning travel, Friday afternoon travel back. There's no dispute in the record that it was Monday through Friday. He didn't have to fly out Sunday night.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Rice. Mr. Geslowitz?
May it please the Court. My name is Irving Geslitz. I represent the plaintiff appellee, Ronald Vendetti. Your Honors asked a number of questions about what was it that Mr. Dubnicka intended or stated to Mr. Vendetti in terms of the duration here. And we have here emails that everyone admits were totally comprehensive in terms of what he stated. And if you read those emails, which are quoted in Judge Aspin's decision and quoted in our briefs in depth, you can see that it was clear that this was going to be an ongoing thing ad infinitum.
Ad infinitum?
Well, Mr. Rice tries to minimize.
What sense would that make for the company to be spending all this money on travel?
Well, Your Honor, this was a situation where they felt that it didn't make sense for Mr. Vendetti to be spending time in Stone Mountain anymore. So now they wanted him to spend time so that Mr. Dubnicka could keep an eye on him in Chicago. The language of his emails are very clear.
I understand. Look, what is your position about the scope of this relocation clause? Does it mean he could veto any travel beyond the 45-mile limit?
The language states that
answer my question.
Yes, the answer is yes.
Answer my question.
Yes.
I can't accept that.
Because if the parties meant to say that he couldn't be compelled to travel at all, wouldn't they have said so? I mean, I'm kind of where my brother is, because to interpret the contract to give him the right to refuse any and all travel beyond 45 miles seems to put an awful lot of weight on the provision that executives shall be located in his current company office location.
Well, Your Honor, the situation here was such that they were asking him to come 2 weeks per month, and the language...
But that's not responsive.
Well, Your Honor,
the question is whether you actually believe this thing, this provision, allows him to veto travel. If you don't think that, then the question is, you know, how would we draw the line?
Well, Your Honor, as Judge Aspin found, the language states, unless mutually agreed, executive shall be located in his current...
So you're clinging to your position that he can veto all travel.
And we're also taking the position that even if this was to be viewed as another relocation provision, in effect, this was a de facto relocation.
But the contract labels his current company office location as his principal location. Doesn't the term, the use of the term principal, suggest that Stone Mountain might not be his sole location? Why would we disregard the use of that particular adjective? I mean, I fear that you're looking at this as Stone Mountain is his sole location other than a radius of 45 miles around that location.
Well, Your Honor, the term principal location was, the parties used that as a short-term expression for current company location. As Judge Aspin found, the parties provided the definition. It's just like the word executive meaning Vendetti. The parties provided that.
But principal doesn't mean only.
Once again, it doesn't matter what short term the parties would have used if they'd used any expression of, if they'd said Stone Mountain. They said what it is. It's the current company office location. That's what it is. Quote, principal location as a short-term expression, a place mark, to mean that.
I don't understand.
No,
you're emptying principal of any meaning.
Your Honor, there's, as Judge Aspin found, and as we argued, this expression of principal location is simply a shorthand. They say...
A shorthand for what?
For current company office location.
But that's, it isn't a shorthand for only. This is my problem. And I fear that the way you are translating this is to principle to mean only.
Your Honor,
there could
this
be a principle, a secondary, a tertiary, a quaternary.
Well, Your Honor, in view of the statements you're making, the bottom line here is, let's go back to the demand that Mr. Dubnicka made, because obviously this was a request for him to be in Chicago 2 weeks a month. That's the reality here. However you're going to want to read Section 1C and Section B, that's the reality of what took place here. And what Mr. Dubnicka said, just read the emails, quote, beginning with April, you need to plan on being in Chicago office the last 2 weeks of each month, period. That's what he states. Later on, he repeats the directive several times. You need to plan on being here the last 2 weeks each month.
Well, what if they'd said 1 week? What if they'd said 3 days a month? Wouldn't your position be the same?
3 days a month?
Yes.
Well, our position would be the same under our interpretation of 1C. But, again, if this is something they were going to ask him to do ad infinitum, well, for the foreseeable future or indefinitely, yes. He was supposed to be working in Stone Mountain. And under this agreement, we have two provisions.
What if they just said, you know, I know you don't like to travel, you have a phobia about flying or something, but we have this one important meeting in Chicago, and, you know, we'd like you to go there just for 1 day in your entire career with us. You would still say he could refuse?
Your Honor.
No, answer my question, okay. Yes or no.
Answer
my question, yes or no.
Yes.
You could veto that.
That's the way we interpret the language as it is. That's the way Judge Aspin interpreted the language.
An unreasonable location, because everybody in business has to do some travel. Everybody. Especially if you're working for a company which has offices in more than one city.
Well, I suppose...
And you're an accountant, or, you know, controller, and obviously there are accounting issues in the different offices of the company.
Your Honor, you could apply, I suppose, a de minimis standard under the way you...
Well, how does he administer a de minimis standard? That's what's troublesome about it. I don't understand how to give a notion of de facto relocation an operational meaning.
Your Honor, in this instance, we have a de facto relocation. To answer some of the questions that Mr. Rice was posed by you, this was intended as an ongoing thing. Mr. Dubnicka was...
Well, according to Mr. Wright, maybe he's completely wrong, you've got three tasks. You've got a training task, which will eventually end when these people are trained. You have a monthly closeout, which could go on forever, and that's 2 or 3 days a month. And then you have the annual audit, and that apparently takes 5 or 6 months. So it doesn't look as if he would have to be there for 2 weeks a month indefinitely.
And that's where Mr. Rice's quotations from the records are not accurate. In this instance, I asked Mr. Dubnicka in his deposition the same things you're asking. You know, how long? The annual audit shouldn't take very long. The testimony was it wouldn't take very long. But Mr. Dubnicka stated, well, I would find things to do to round out his 2 weeks. That's in the record. He stated that. And you can find that at Mr. Dubnicka's deposition testimony at page 95. It's in the record. He was intending, and it's very clear if you read the emails, Mr. Rice was going to be there 2 weeks a month. He made it very clear, and he said, if you don't come here 2 weeks a month, it's insubordination. Mr. Vendetti gave him the opportunity. Mr. Vendetti offered, I'll come a couple days a month if that's what you want. But no, this was something Mr. Dubnicka wanted for 2 weeks a month. There was no relief in sight for Mr. Vendetti. Other than that, they had a 30-day opportunity to cure that. They never did. They never countermanded their order.
Does the record contain any information about the travel expenses that...
You know, that's another thing that Mr. Rice has stated. There's nothing in the record on that. There's nothing in the record. He's stating we're going to pay the hotel and all that. You know, he's stating that's what may have happened in the past. In the past, he'd only come at most 2 to 3 days. This is, Mr. Danica says you're going to be here 2 weeks a month. That's what the email says. That's what's in the record.
Isn't it implicit that they were going to pay his expenses?
I don't know how to answer that, Your Honor, whether that's implicit or not. He never said 2 business weeks. He says 2 weeks. It's just not in the record. So whether it's implicit or not, I can't answer that. I do want to stress here that the cases that Mr. Rice quotes do say that at some point in time it does become a relocation. And in this instance, where there is no relief in sight for Mr. Vendetti, not the words indefinite, foreseeable future, as Judge Rovner pointed out, were the terms being used. He had no other option but to do what he did. And if the company ever intended that they didn't mean for him to be doing this ad infinitum or whatever, they could have said it. They had an opportunity to cure. And they didn't. They stuck to their guns. And I have to again stress that, as you pointed out, the annual audit shouldn't have taken that long. The cross-training was just for the month of April. The monthly year-end reports, reviews, that was no more than 2 or 3 days. Mr. Dubnicka wanted him there 2 weeks a month. He wanted him in the office. And I must say also that there's in the record that eventually they were going to be the people he was cross-training were the people who were going to be replacing the people in his own office in Stone Mountain. They were eventually going to isolate him there so that eventually he couldn't do anything in Stone Mountain. And so there was no reason they couldn't have brought those people down to Stone Mountain for him to train there. In fact,
when they were trained, they were going to be relocated to
Chicago? No, they were going to be working in Chicago. The people they wanted him to train were the people who were going to replace his people in Stone Mountain, and those people were going to be working in Chicago. So the handwriting was on the roll.
Forgive me.
Okay.
The people that he was going to train, they're Chicagoans.
Right.
Who are going to replace the people who worked for him in Stone Mountain.
That is correct.
And so the people in Stone...
I'm sorry?
They closed the Stone Mountain office?
Well, they didn't close the Stone Mountain office, but they were... I think there was a long-term lease, so they couldn't very well close it. But they were basically emptying out people who had reported to Mr. Vendetti. And the people he was going to retrain, as I stated before, were the people who were being hired in the Chicago office to replace the people in the Stone Mountain office. So I ask you, what was the future that Mr. Vendetti was seeing here? He negotiated an agreement with two provisions talking about how he's going to get severance pay if either his physical location was changed or his place of employment was going to be moved. He's being asked to work 2 weeks a month. The language that's being used by Mr. Dubnicka is beginning in April, you need to plan on being in the Chicago office the last 2 weeks of each month. No modifier. That's the terms he used. And, Your Honor, I would submit under those circumstances, there was clearly a de facto relocation. At that point in time, when they stated that, when they didn't modify their position, even though Mr. Vendetti's email offered various suggestions saying, I'll come for a task you need me, but not for routine tasks. I would say in those circumstances, it would be unconscionable not to find that this was a de facto relocation.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Rice, how much time does he have? A minute?
Your Honor, I realize I don't have much time. I'll have to stand on the brief with regard to the separate issue of the fees. Just a couple points on what Mr. Geslowitz mentioned in his section. First of all, Mr. Dubnicka in his deposition testimony said, and this is on page 184, I told him I needed him there to work on the clothes and some other things. I didn't know how long it was going to last, but that was the expectation.
What about this business about rounding it out? I'll find other things for him to do.
There is an email indicating that, but again, Your Honor, as I indicated before, that was in the context of...
He was only kidding.
It was in the context of he needed him there for the 2 weeks. He didn't know for sure how long each week those tasks would last. He didn't want to say, Monday and leave Tuesday.
He finished his tasks.
Well, Your Honor, I think the problem was that with the audit, they needed him to be available for the auditors, and
isn't
it wasn't
some
predictable.
Some kind of feud between these two guys?
I would say there is a backdrop here, Your Honor, in terms of...
Is he trying to force Vendetti out and somehow get him out without having to pay the severance?
There is absolutely no evidence...
Well, it sounds like that. I mean, he obviously doesn't want to spend all his time in Chicago. Don't understand why, of course. But he doesn't want to be in Chicago. He wants to be in Stone Mountain, whatever that is. And so D'Amica makes it, makes his life miserable by sticking him here for 2 weeks a month and say if there's nothing for you to do, I'll find something to round out your 2 weeks of misery.
Your Honor, there was clear evidence that Mr. Vendetti was needed to do these things. It was not make work. They did not invent things for him to do. There was a legitimate, pressing business need for him to help out with these things. Mr. D'Amica inherited a situation that was in disarray. And yes, he was a taskmaster, but it was for a reason. It was because his predecessor, Mr. Fritz...
That the people he's training in Chicago are going to replace his staff in Stone Mountain?
That is correct, Your Honor, but that Stone...
How is Vendetti going to supervise them? Or how was he going to supervise them?
Mr. Vendetti...
Have his staff in Chicago? He'll have to spend all his time in Chicago.
Your Honor, Mr. Vendetti, that Stone Mountain office remained open. It remains open today, to the best of my knowledge. There was no plan to close it.
But his staff is going to be in Chicago, so how is he going to supervise them?
Your Honor, he had some other staff people that remained in Stone Mountain.
All right, but his main staff people, or many of them, are going to be in Chicago.
Now, I think the view was...
How is he going to supervise them?
I think the view was that with email, computers,
and
everything else...
Well, and he doesn't have to be in Chicago 2 weeks a month if emails and computers and all that are such efficient methods of communication.
I think that the short answer, Your Honor, is that Mr. D'Amica made a business judgment that it would be better...
Is it a business judgment, or is he just trying to get rid of this guy?
I think it was a business judgment. Mr. D'Amica's judgment was passed off on by the chairman of the company, and it looks like my time is up, but it was passed off on by the chairman of the company. So.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Rice, Mr. Gesselit.